fish, right?
Yes.
House Committee on Revenue will come to order. We'll open a work session on Senate Bill 301. Chris?
Good morning, Mr. Chair, Madam Co-Chair, and members of the committee. For Senate Bill 301A, in your packet, you have three amendments, dash A5, dash A8, and dash A9, as well as the corresponding paperwork, the revenue impact statements and the fiscal statements for each of them. The revenue impacts are a little bit different, and the fiscal impact on each of them is a no impact. But to take them in order, starting with the A5 amendment, and what this essentially does is takes the 301A back to the introduced version of the bill. Engrossing it to the A, there were provisions added that were the add-backs for the bonus and Section 179, and those provisions conflict with current law, so the bill didn't work, and that was the problem that was discovered, and so it got pulled back. What the A5 does is simply remove those provisions, so there is no conflict with existing law, and takes it back to the A version, I mean the introduced version. And the revenue impact is identical to the 301A, which is simply the revenue loss of $15.4 million in 09-11 and $1.5 million in 11-13. That hasn't changed from the discussions last week. Again, the provisions that got moved didn't have a revenue impact. It was a duplication of existing law in terms of the add-back. So the revenue impact is the same, no fiscal impact, and that's all the dash A5 does.
Okay.
Moving on to the dash A9.
I wonder if we should dispose of the A5 first, just to reduce our list. We have three amendments we're dealing with today. The A5 is the simplest one because it's the one we have to have in order to move on the bill. Representative Bailey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move the dash A5 amendment dated 3111 to Senate Bill 301A.
Thank you. Representative Bailey moves the A5 amendment to the bill. Discussion? Everybody understand what we're voting on? Is there any objections to the A5 amendment? Okay. With no objection, that motion is adopted. Go ahead and tell us about the nines then, please.
Okay, the dash A9 deals with a small technical reconnect for the estate tax. And basically what it does is it extends the estate tax filing deadline to September 17th, 2011, corresponding to federal statute. And where that is in the dash A9 amendment is on line 8, the reference to section 301D1 of public law 111.312 is 9 months after December 17, 2010, or September 17, 2011. For decedents who died between January 1, 2010 and December 17, 2010, if a federal estate tax return is required. And it makes no changes regarding the due dates for the payment of tax, penalty, or interest. And that's what the remaining language is, subsections 2 and 3. So in cases, it is a very narrowly crafted amendment so that any payment of tax or penalty that has been made or the due date for the tax is still due, is just an extension for the return, and so consequently the revenue impact is minimal. There could be, just in the mix of the filing, there could be a minimal revenue impact in 09-11 offset by a revenue gain in 11-13 if there's some sort of shifting there. And so for our purposes, minimal is less than about $50,000. So conceptually, there really shouldn't be any because there is no change
it's
in the
timing issue.
It's all a timing issue. But we have put a minimal on there because there could always be some technical issue where there is a little bit of money transferred between the two biennia. And so on the revenue impact statement, where we've tried to show that, is in that table, we've taken the two pieces of the bill and the A9, if they got crafted together, the general fund revenue impact for the Senate Bill 301A is still the 15.4 and the 1.5. That would still be in there. Mm-hmm. And if the A9 got crafted onto the 301, then there would be a minimal impact in 09-11, 11-13 added to that. So in summary, it doesn't change the 15.4 or 1.5. Because the revenue impact for the A9 itself, the estate tax piece itself, is a minimal.
Great. Very small.
It's very small.
Does anyone have questions about this? I have a number of questions. Representative Berger.
Well, the questions are welcome, Mr. Chair. So you understand, the CPAs asked for this amendment because it fits within that 2010 framework of this bill, and I was resistant, frankly, to adding an amendment to this bill because we were trying to get this bill out before March 1st. I had a deadline. And so as far as I'm concerned, since we had to delay this bill anyway, I am happy to entertain this amendment at this time because I think it is appropriate. We can come back and do it later, but this is a vehicle where it fits perfectly, and it would streamline and help our tax sort of filers understand, you know, the timing issues. So I would support the amendment. I'm not going to live and die over
it. Yeah. I don't have any problem with the idea at all, but my concern is about what this is, what the language actually does. And ICLC is here. Maybe you're the people to ask the question of. I'm concerned. Well, I guess the threshold question for me is, I thought, perhaps erroneously, that there was no federal estate tax in 2000 for people who for estates of decedents who died in 2010, or at least before December 17th. Is that not? If that's true, then why would we be worrying about an estate tax return for decedents who died during that period of time?
Good morning, Chair Barnhart, members of the committee, Kate Toswell from Office of Legislative Counsel. I understand that we are discussing the A-9s.
Correct.
And these would provide an extension for filing only and not for payment of tax for the state, what's currently known as the state inheritance tax. The provision that is cited in subsection 1, which was enacted December 17, 2010, it provided for an election at the federal level. So there actually may be decedents for whom there is a state tax that's paid for 2010. This particular amendment would address only decedents dying it's actually most of 2010,
yeah,
on or after December 31st, 2009, and before December 17th, 2010. And at the federal level, there is an additional 9 months for those estates to file. In addition to the 9 months following the date of death, the federal law in that particular provision is giving them an additional 9 months. I believe that the intention was for them to be able to react to the changes in the federal law that are contained in that Public Law 111.312. And that was passed in December and has actually other tax provisions in it. We've been discussing that particular piece of legislation. The intent, though, of the A-9s is not to allow additional time for payment of the state inheritance tax, and also we've added subsection 3.
That's subsection 3, isn't it?
Subsection 2 would make the tax still due,
yes,
on the date that it would have been due absent the federal legislation. So what that ends up meaning is if an estate is likely to owe taxes, they're going to need to make a deposit, but they wouldn't actually have to file until the date that the federal return is due, so that they would have the same filing date, which at the very least is a question of convenience, not having two separate filing dates, but certainly there would need to be some level of calculation that was happening so that the tax wasn't late. And I understand that was the compromise, to keep the payments within this biennium, and it would require a payment of a deposit.
Mm-hmm.
In subsection 3, the intention there is to address the late penalties based on the late filing of a return. So that actually is a small universe of estates that we're talking about, because they would be late if they died after December 31st, 2009. In order to be filing late, they would be filing in November or December of last year, and I believe the intention is if they have already filed but they were late, the A9s shouldn't now cancel the penalties or interest right. that would have been due, that are currently due. So that's what that that's the intention of subsection 3. And this amendment doesn't address any future changes that we may make to the state, to Chapter 118, which is the state inheritance tax. If there are other changes, we're going to need additional language to deal with the filing of returns for estates of decedents who die in 2011.
Okay. You've actually dealt with all three of my questions in one answer, and I appreciate that very much. I think the big issue for me is I simply did not understand what Congress did with the federal side. And I assume this election you're talking about has something to do with a stepped-up basis, but maybe not, huh?
That is it. That is a piece of
it. That's a piece of it. All right. Other questions for Elsie? Representative Brewer?
Thank you. I move Dash A9, dated 3211, to be included in SB 301A.
Thank you. Representative Brewer moves the A9 amendments to the bill. Is there further discussion? Is there any objection to the A9s? I don't see any. With that, the A9s are the motion is carried. Chris, you want to tell us about the 8?
Okay, the Dash A8 modifies existing law in Chapter 316. It's 316.739, and then identical language for 317.301. These are the provisions that are in statute now that were the source of the conflict for the amendments that got added to 301. And so the A8 make two changes. The in Section 34 there, the language that says the language that gets deleted pertaining to the January 1, 2008 through January 2009 and is replaced by as applicable to the tax year of the taxpayer. That's considered a technical change and just trying to clarify what the statute means. Without this change, for the interpretation to get where the intent is, you need that existing language as well as an applicability clause. So you have to go to two places to get to that interpretation. So the intent here is to just put this in one statute so it's very clear here. And you can see where those changes are made in both sets of statute. The policy piece, if you will, is on page 3, and it's section 36. And that's where it states that these two statutes apply to tax years beginning on or after January 1, 2009, and before January 1, 2011. That makes these disconnect pieces existing for only tax years 2009 and 2010. And the three pieces that are in here, if we go back to 316.739, you have subsection 1, 2, and 3. And the ones that have been of interest are in subsection 2, the 168K, that's the bonus depreciation. And subsection 3 is the section 179. Now, in subsection 1, refers to the IRC section 108, and that has to do with a discharge of indebtedness that only existed for 2009 and 2010. So ending, reconnecting to that provision for 2011 has no effect because it only existed for 2009 and 2010. So in terms of a revenue impact piece, the relevant pieces are still the bonus depreciation and section 179. So these statutes, as they exist, indicate a permanent disconnect for these provisions of law. The Dash A8 amendment, through the changes in Section 36, make that disconnect exist only for 9 and 10, and then we reconnect to the bonus and the expanded Section 179 for tax years 11 moving forward. Now, on the revenue impact statement, how I've tried to show that is, again, trying to keep the pieces separate. The total impact would be the combination of these numbers, but you have the two rows, and the first row, the general fund, SB 301A, again, is the familiar $15.4 million revenue loss for 09-11 and $1.5 million revenue loss for 11-13. That's identical to what you've discussed before, and there's no change there. The change here is in the second row, the general fund that I've labeled general fund A8 only, which has a $93 million revenue loss for 11 and 13, and a $43.7 million revenue gain for 13-15. To keep the asterisk there is very important because the March 11 revenue forecast, which you heard in a few weeks ago, includes the revenue loss in 11-13 and the revenue gain in 13-15. So the revenue loss and gain here are relative to a corrected revenue forecast. There is no change compared to the existing forecast. There's no change compared to the March forecast. But when we put these impacts together, the frame of reference is always current law. So that's why the box contains the minus 93 and then the plus 43. But the asterisk is very important in terms of understanding the frame of reference of how to interpret those revenue impacts.
Okay. All right. Representative Berger?
Mr. Chair, I would move the dash A8 amendments to Senate Bill 301A.
Representative Berger moves the A8 amendments. Discussion.
May I speak to my
Yes, please.
Yeah, thank you. Mr. Chair, when we came into this building, and actually before, it was with the understanding that on January 1st, 2011, we were fully connected to changes in provisions, including these around these really important business provisions that the federal government basically put forth in order to stimulate the economy. And, Mr. Chair, I think we're agreed that our economy in Oregon could really use some help and some stimulation. This is a timing issue. It speaks to businesses getting busy at the business of business, spending money, buying things, employing people, adding to the payroll of the state. And I was very pleased, and I think the business community was pleased, to think that these provisions were available going forward in this state. Businesses made decisions based on that information, prepared for their coming year. Then a week ago, it's gone. Suddenly it's gone. Our revenue forecast was based on these provisions. These are important things to Oregon businesses moving forward. I think we need to connect. 2010 is gone. I'm comfortable with what we are on this bill with regard to 2010, but we need to stop at 2010 and say, okay, Oregon businesses, you are important. You are the economic engine that's going to move us forward out of this recession, and you need to get busy buying these things and moving and employing people. Bonus depreciation, expensing, it exists. But it is a long-term thing, and businesses will have to keep two sets of books for 2010 if they did any activity on this era, on this particular issue anyway. But going forward to 2011, I think it's really important that we say Oregon is open for businesses and our businesses are part of the federal stimulus package. I strongly support this amendment.
Thank you, Representative Reed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I agree with a lot of what Representative Berger said, particularly the thrust and what I think are the underlying themes and messages. I'm afraid I come to a slightly different conclusion about what I think we ought to do today. And I would start by agreeing and acknowledging that I think everyone has reason to be frustrated with how we got here, with the misunderstanding about what had actually occurred, and that there, I don't think anyone has any question or doubt about the urgency to move with respect to 2010. Those Oregonians who are eager to file their taxes, that needs to go. I don't think there's going to be any objection to that. I don't think, however, that there is the same urgency about 2011. While there is a lot of good that might come from quick action, we are just a month into a significant session with a lot of work yet to do, a lot of discussion and work to understand the full budget implications of our actions, very significant needs throughout a wide range of things that the state is doing, work to be done on revenue stability, work to be done on economic development, and I think there is good reason to suspect that we can get to a good outcome that recognizes the positive impacts of a full connection, But I want to be very deliberate and careful with how we proceed on that. And I'm looking forward to continuing that discussion, both in this committee, in the rest of the legislature, and with all the stakeholders who have legitimate interests on it. So I'm not in a position to support these amendments, but I wanted to be clear about why I feel that way. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Wand.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Over the last month or so, one of the things I've realized coming down to Salem is that we have some fence mending to do. And as a body, to a person, I've found that the other representatives have welcomed me with an extended hand and a smile, and that we've been able to work very well together. I think that theme needs to extend one step further. There are a lot of difficulties surrounding the last couple of years, particularly with regard to tax policy and with regard to our business community, which of course is responsible for laying the foundation for the tax revenues that support everything that this state does. And when this situation came to light, with all of us believing that we were already connected in this, it turns out we're not, it reopened some old wounds. And I think that's why I think this is the best time for us to move on this amendment today, right now. In addition to the policy, the policy that supports this is tremendous. It came from the federal government. It is a policy that will create jobs. And mind you, 10.6% is an interesting number to me. That's the number of our unemployment rate in the state of Oregon, and it's been there for a long time. It was only last month it went down a whole 0.2% to 10.4. But what's interesting, and perhaps most interesting, is that it's a point higher than the average for the country. And by disconnecting from this particular portion of the stimulus package and the ideas that came from the federal government to create jobs, what we're doing is we're saying, once again, this isn't the best place for you to be. And I think Oregon is a great place for us to be. It's a great place for businesses to come, but we have to welcome them with an extended hand and friendship. So for credibility's sake, and also for opening the doors to the state of Oregon, I think that this amendment is necessary and that we should support it. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Brewer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I believe this bill is very important for a couple reasons. One is we all dealt when we saw this bill last week when it was on the Senate side, when the economic forecast was done. It was all dealt in good faith that bonus depreciation of 179 was connected. We connected to the Internal Revenue Code on that. To do anything but to do that to me is to not deal in good faith at this point. I'd like to speak on some technical things. One is to point out bonus depreciation isn't just a gimme to businesses. Bonus depreciation, 168K of the Internal Revenue Code, actually requires some very technical criteria. One of those being that the asset must be new. It cannot be used. So when a business actually acquires new equipment, it is a stimulus to whoever manufactures that equipment that's being purchased, to whoever is the service provider of that equipment being purchased. It actually is a big stimulant. We are into the third month of this tax year, creating great uncertainty for businesses who perhaps already were under the understanding, as the best and brightest minds that our legislature has brought, as well as our staff, our economists, we're all under this impression that it was there. Many businesses have already made a decision predicated upon the Internal Revenue Code and the Oregon Revised Statutes being in sync on bonus depreciation. We are now making them change their forward thinking on this. Our poor CPAs and taxpayers need to file their tax returns. We're now in March 3rd. April 15th is when they're due. We have just a little bit over a month to get it there. The clock is ticking, and we need to make sure that we can give certainty that tuition deduction is there for them, that if they happen to have a child covered under their medical insurance up to the age of 26, that that is not taxable to them for state purposes, even and it's excluded from their federal income. A lot of reasons why we need to push with urgency, but that clock, in meeting the needs of taxpayers and the tax preparer community, it puts us on bended knee, where we shouldn't be, having to do with the reconnect on bonus and 179. And I do contend this. To the extent that we disconnect, in 2009, I wasn't here, but many people didn't agree with the disconnect of bonus and 179, but it passed through anyway. To the extent that we continue to disconnect on 179 and bonus depreciation, which is a timing issue at best and a timing issue on revenue to our coffers, it actually creates permanent revenue loss in the tracking mechanism. The bookkeeping is complex. If we have pass-through entities that come through to an individual or another business entity, it is very difficult to track all the changes that we disconnect. And I think it is irresponsible for us to disconnect because we are doing harm to the overall tax coffers of our state. And that's what I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Brewer. Further discussion? Representative Betts.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Speak in favor of the motion. The issue breaks down into two pieces for me, and they've been commented upon. But the first one is the credibility piece, and it goes to what people believe when they see us act. And what they all thought is that we didn't have this money, and they've made their plans. If you look at the price of Caterpillar stock or John Deere stock, you'll notice it's through the roof. And the reason it's through the roof is because all the farmers and ranchers and businessmen and women are buying that kind of stuff. And they've already bought it. And so to now say, oh, we just found out that we made a mistake and how lucky we are that that happened, sends a message I really don't think the people of Oregon need to receive. Because we already have a credibility issue here. And this plays into those who think they shouldn't pay their taxes hands when we do this kind of thing. So that's the first issue. There's a second. The money, as Representative Eric Brewer states, we're going to get the money. It's a question of when. And so, again, if we decide we suddenly found this windfall, let's spend it. It sends all the wrong signals. So this proposed amendment would fix and repair that and go a long ways to rebuilding some of the faith folks have lost in our legislature. So I strongly recommend that we support this for the purpose of building on this opportunity to show the folks of Oregon that we actually mean what we thought. And so I would truly hope we vote for this amendment.
Thank you, Representative Bailey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would echo some of the comments that Representative Reed said and expand on them a little bit. This legislation has been on a fast track. Through the legislature, and it's been on a fast track for a good reason. We understood it to have implications for this biennium as well as for the previous tax year and for taxpayers that are looking to file. And because of that, I'm happy that we are moving out a bill that creates that certainty. However, we have recently become aware of an incorrect interpretation in the law for the subsequent biennium. I look forward to continuing to address that and would echo some of the concerns about sending good, clear signals to businesses about their value to the state and incorporating that into that conversation. However, to address the issue of credibility, I think it must also be pointed out that in order for us to be credible with our constituents and with the people of Oregon, we need to demonstrate that we are going to carefully consider what has been a major shift in our understanding of what the tax law will be for next session, and that as we consider that impact with all of the other moving pieces that we must work on over the next couple of months, that it is worth moving off of the fast track that we have been on for the 2011 portions while continuing the fast track for the portions that have immediate impact. And by separating out those two tracks, I think we can offer the most credibility to our constituents that we have carefully considered all of the implications of our actions and that we're moving forward in a way that best benefits them in this state.
Thank you. Representative Gelser.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I agree with all of my colleagues that it is essential that we move 301 out today. We absolutely must give certainty to Oregon taxpayers. However, I think we make a mistake if we rush on the bonus depreciation issue. We are looking at a very challenging budget for 11-13, and to take this piece out of the conversation so rapidly would be an error. We need to continue talking about this, and we need to continue talking about this in the context of our programs, our services, our tax expenditures, and how we plan to budget balance our budget in 11-13. I look forward to coming back into a further public hearing on this issue so that we can consider it carefully in the context of the new information and in the context of our responsibilities to schools, to public safety, and to human services, and to the economy of the state of Oregon in a much more careful, deliberate way.
Thank you. Further discussion? The motion before us is the adoption of the A8 amendment. Carol, would you call the roll?
Representative Benz.
Aye.
Representative Delter.
No.
Representative Reed.
No.
Representative Wan.
Aye.
Vice Chair Bailey.
No.
Vice Chair Brewer.
Yay.
Co-Chair Barnhart.
No.
Co-Chair Berger.
Aye.
The motion is four yes, four against, fails to achieve in a majority, and therefore fails. Representative Bailey?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move Senate Bill 301A as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Bailey moves Senate Bill 301A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion?
Mr. Chair, I can't support it without the A8 amendment.
Thank you, Representative Berger. Any other discussion, Representative Wan?
I'm going to be supporting the bill as a whole. I don't feel that I can responsibly vote against the changes that we're making for 2010, but I look forward to the opportunity to revisit the 2011 Reconnect, which is critically important to our state.
Thank you. Representative Benz?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I also can't support the bill in its current form.
Thank you. Further discussion? Carol, would you call the roll? And this time we are voting on sending the bill to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Carol?
Representative Dent.
No.
Representative Delter.
Aye.
Representative Reed.
Aye.
Representative Wan.
Aye.
Co-Chair Bailey.
Aye.
Co-Chair Brewer.
Aye.
Co-Chair Barnhart.
Aye.
Co-Chair Berger.
No.
My count is 6-2. Is that right? All right. The motion, having received the required majority, is adopted. The bill goes to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and I'll carry the bill. And with that,
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Representative Berger.
I'd like to serve notice of a possible minority report.
Thank you. Representative Berger files notice of serves notice of a possible minority report. We appreciate that. Thank you. Anything else on the work session? All right. With that, we will close the work session, and we've completed our business for the day. Do not forget, we have another meeting in 20 minutes. And with that, the Revenue Committee is adjourned.